I just slipped through an exam, and you're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
Tēnā koutou I tēnei ata. Kei te whakaronga mai koe ki te reo I rirangi kotahi. Ko Zach toku ingoa.
Ko Amiria taku ingoa.
And you're listening to the Radio 1 te reo I rirangi kotahi news show for Rāmere, Te Ruatakau o Haratua.
Coming up on today's program, we have our weekly segment Business as Usual, where we'll be talking about the 2022 government budget, which was announced yesterday. We'll break down the budget, look at its long-term impacts and relevance to young New Zealanders. After that, we'll be joined by Associate Professor Joanna Williams from the University of Otago's Anatomy Department to discuss some new research which would make identifying Alzheimer's earlier much easier. We also have a feature investigating the repercussions of ACT's new alternative budget, which would abolish the Ministry of Māori Development. Lastly, we'll catch up with Michelle Driscoll from the Otago Farmers Market to hear about what's fresh and in season tomorrow morning.
Up next, we have Dave Borrow with the news and weather, but for now, we have Leon Bridges with bad news. Stay tuned on R1 News on Te Reo I Rirangi Kotahi.
Ko Dave Toku Ingoa, and these are your Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi news updates for Te Rua Tekau o Haratua. The 2022 government budget was announced yesterday. The budget included a $350 payment for 3 months starting in August for those over 18 and earning less than $70,000 a year. Subsidised transport will continue into August and fares will permanently be half price for those using a community services card. This budget also saw the largest injection in history to the country's health system, being primary health services, the ambulance system, Pharmac, mental health funding and hospital rebuilds for Whangarei and Nelson. Leader of the opposition, Christopher Luxon, has labelled his budget backwards, and ACT Party leader David Seymour has dubbed it a brain drain budget that will see ambitious New Zealanders leaving the country. The Dunedin City Council could increase its capital spending by an additional $30 million over the 2022-2023 financial year, a move that councillors have called at the nearly $190 million program very ambitious. Council is set to debate the program in a discussion later today. The $189.5 million capital expenditure program would be used for Three Waters developments and the refurbishing of properties such as the Civic Centre. The DCC also indicated that renovations to the Moana Pool are going to go over the projected $21 million from the 2021-2031 10-year plan. A tornado has ripped through the lower North Island this morning around 6:30 a.m. Buildings have been damaged, trees and power lines brought down, and vegetable crops ruined. Fire and emergency services in Levin have reported roofs lifted, and residents have been advised to stay home unless travel is critical. Now it's time for the weather.
The Radio 1 91 FM weather.
In Nainai, the day will be a bit rough, folks. Expect some medium to heavy showers, snow down to 500 metres, and some absolutely throbbing southwesterlies. We have a high of Tokomatahi, 11, with a low of Rima, 5. And tomorrow doesn't look much better, y'all. A Apopo, we have got additional heavy showers, snow down to 500 metres, with strong, gusty gale southwesterlies, with a high of Toko, 10, and a low of Ono, 6. You'll be better off staying inside. All right, comrades. These have been your Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi weather updates for Toroa, Tokou, or Haratua.
Thank you so much for those weather and news updates, Dave. Up next, we'll have business as usual with economist Murat Ungur to discuss the government's latest budget. But before that, we have El Hotel with Astronaut. It is currently 11:08 here on the Uramere News Programme. Take care. Stay tuned.
Passenger to planets far away. It's my school flight.
That was Astronaut by El Hotel. And now we are joined by Mira Ungo from the Department of Economics here at Otago University for this week's installment of Business as Usual on R1 News. Today, we'll be tackling the government's budget, which was announced for 2022 just yesterday. Kia ora, Mira. How's it going?
Thank you very much, Amelia. Thank you very much for having me.
So can we just talk about generally, what is a government budget and why is it so crucial or such an important thing that's announced every year?
Of course. First of all, the government budget gets announced once a year, normally about the middle of May, and it sets out how much money or revenue the government expects to make this year and what it plans to spend it on all. So basically, most of the government's money comes from the tax revenue. And think about the government as a household. So we have a team of 5 million, and we all chip in, and then the head of the household, the government, decides how to spend. So it pays for the essentials, like social welfare, health, education, and so forth. And the budget is also a chance to find out if the government is doing a good job of running its household. So the government will either report a surplus, how much money it has left over, or a deficit, how much it's blown the budget by. And we also need to understand that it's true that a budget does not please everyone. So this is because it's a big challenge to address well-being and social concerns over the short term, while at the same time taking steps for sustainable long-term economic growth. And of course, as you know, budgets are also intensely political affairs.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that was announced yesterday as part of the wellbeing budget was a temporary cost of living payment for those over 18 earning under 70K and aren't currently eligible for the winter energy payment. They'll now receive $350, and this will go to about 2.1 million New Zealanders. Can you tell me a bit about what sort of impact this will have and if this short-term boost will have a long-term benefit for young people in New Zealand?
Sure. We have to understand that there is a growing concern in New Zealand and in many other countries about the cost of living. Mm-hmm. So life is becoming much more expensive. So let me just give you some data, some statistics. In the 12 months to March 2022, Consumer Price Index, the CPI inflation, surged to 6.9% compared with 5.9% in last December, 4.9% in September, 3.3% in June, and just 1.5% in last March 2021. So basically, from just 1.5% from March 2021, hope it's almost around 7%. And price increases have been led by the essential goods and services. So price increases for food, transport, and housing are particularly harmful for low-income households. So when we think about society, we think, okay, there are rich people, there are middle-income people, and there are poor people. Mm-hmm. But when we really delve into the details for each segment, then we see that, for example, there are some people who wake up every day and they are just thinking about what to put and how to put dinner on their dinner table each night. So there are really very poor segment of the society, and for them, whether it is $10, $20, any transfer, it helps.
Yeah.
But we also understand that this is just a temporary one, right? And their problems will not go away after 3-4 months later. So this is one thing that we have to keep in mind. And if we just go a little bit to the mid-income levels, then we will see people, and you can say that, okay, so $27 per week will not help me anything. That's fine. That's understandable because food prices increasing and other expenditure items, their prices are also going up. So one suggestion, especially for the young people, or if you are going to the university and eligible for this payment, then all right. So if you really do not need this, then save it. So do not touch it. Because it's not an income, it's just a tax rebate, and the payment is individualized, so you will just find it in your account. So if you do not have to use it, just save it. Mm-hmm. Perhaps in October, November, December, when you graduate, You can use it as a part of your moving allocation expenses or others. Or maybe you will see some people in your neighborhood around yourself who really need some money. So you can just help your friends or help your neighbors or give it to charity. So if you think that if you do not need that money, just try to save it or try to give people who actually need. But again, these are temporary solutions, and for some people, they are going to create some relief, but inflation is with us. Inflation is not going anywhere, and that's why cost of living crisis will not be avoided or will not be solved with these temporary relief packages.
Right, yeah. And so the winter energy payment that particular beneficiaries get is about $30 a week for the months of winter. Would a more permanent benefit for students like this be beneficial in the long run?
When we think about one policy instrument, we also look at the other complementary packages, as you say. So basically, in addition to this cost of living payment, there is fuel duty reduction, right? So basically, the government is extending the temporary reduction in fuel excise duties. Same thing for the reduction in public transport fares. So another further two-month extension. And they are extending warmer Kiwi homes, etc. So basically, if we think about all these packages together, then they can create a bit difference. Mm-hmm. For example, in last April, the government provided increases for many benefits, and also the government increased the minimum wage. When you think about the minimum wage and other packages, just do not think them by one policy instrument. Try to think them as a part of policy mix. And then there are recent research, both in the context of New Zealand and in the context of United States, when we think of these individual policy tools together, then they can actually create a bit difference. Mm-hmm. So basically, getting the optimal policy mix is important here. So one instrument, one tool, will not solve the problems. But if we think of getting the several instruments to help people in an optimal way, then we can find a relief for many people in both in the short term and in the medium term.
Right. So in view of those more general policy ideas, given that Aotearoa has some of the lowest core public debt in the OECD and is currently well within sustainable limits according to the IMF, uh-huh. would the government have or could the government have spent more money in this budget?
Well, this is true. So basically, when we look at the debt-to-GDP ratio, historically there are lots of problems for countries like Spain, Greece, Japan, Italy. So their debt-to-GDP ratio is very, very high, more than 100%. So we have a moderate debt-to-GDP ratio below the OECD average. But this doesn't mean that we don't have debt. We still have debt, and eventually someone will have to pay this debt.
Right.
And probably we are just shifting the burden onto the shoulders of young generations. And if you just keep spending right now, you will also create inflationary pressures. So you will not just make central banks, reserve banks' life easier. So that's why we have to be very careful, because when we think about economic policy and economics, it's a dynamic process. So today's decisions can create lots of problems for tomorrow. So just because we have a relatively lower debt-to-GDP ratio does not mean that we just have to spend mm-hmm. all the money to different items. So we have to be very careful. We have to pick the spending items very carefully. So we have to think about a little bit future and how can we increase productivity and economic growth in the future so that the debt-to-GDP ratio will not create any problem in the future for our young generation.
Mm-hmm. And one last question for you. ACT leader David Seymour claimed that this announcement will create a brain drain that will see ambitious New Zealanders searching to live overseas. Is this a valid critique of the government's announcement?
So forget the budget. I always tell my students the following one. It is necessary for an individual to have overseas experience. So because most of you were born in New Zealand. It is nice country, safe country, secure country, but it's far away from the major centers, United States or Europe. And you have one major advantage, which is English. So English is your native language, and you can find jobs and other opportunities. So if you're an ambitious student, let's say, you are about to graduate this year, right? And you are thinking postgraduate studies, master's, PhD. For PhD, if you are ambitious, then try to go to the U.S. Then you will see, because here, there's a small country, there's a small pool, and you really do not test your own personal limits. Then you go to the United States for PhD, for example, then you will be surrounded by other smart individuals coming from India, China, Vietnam, Greece, Turkey, other parts of the United States. And then you will learn from them. So it's going to be a life-enriching experience. And for job opportunities, you can always go to Australia and some other countries. Because first of all, they offer high wage rates in the short run. This is always good because you need to save some money and you need to earn some money. And after accumulating some experience in other parts of the world, and after learning, after enriching your life, you can always come back to New Zealand and then try to give back to New Zealand. So regardless of this budget, it is particularly important for young individuals to explore the rest of the world, to enrich their life, to learn more from the others, and to gain more experience, more cultural experience, personal experience, job-wise experience, like education-wise experience. Then you can come back to New Zealand, and then you can give back to society. I think if you just think about a little bit long-term, and then this could be a nice decision, but it is true. So we have low wage in this country right now, and we have the productivity problem. And our productivity has been lower than the OECD average. In 1950, New Zealand's labor productivity was very close to the productivity of United States and Australia, but right now it is less than 60%. Once upon a time, we were much more productive than South Korea. And right now, South Korea is much more productive than New Zealand. When people think about South Korea, the international brands, Samsung, Hyundai, come to the mind. But when people think about New Zealand in outside world, then they say, oh, okay, nice country, tourism, cricket, rugby. So we have to produce high technology-intensive products. We have to invest in innovation. We have to invest in pure research so that we can increase productivity. Once we increase our productivity, then we will increase our wage rates. Then the young people will say, okay, I'm earning enough, we are a productive country, then we can stay in this country. But this is a long-term objective. So I think our focus, and I think this is where the budget fails, our focus should be on the long-term productivity. If we can increase long-term productivity, then wage rates will increase, and then people will do not have any incentive to go outside, and they can stay here, and they can contribute.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for coming on today, Murat.
Thanks, Amelia.
It is 11:25, and that was Business as Usual. We were talking about the government's budget, which was announced yesterday. Coming up next on the program, we will be talking to Professor Joanna Williams about new research which shows blood tests could be used to identify early Alzheimer's early. But before that, here's a song. This is Tune Yards with Business.
Climb to lose you. tell me, but all my wisdom he parted. But oh, please at least answer me this. Answer me, what's the business, yeah? Don't take my life away, don't take my life away from a distance, yeah. Don't take my life away, don't take my life away. I'm a victim, yeah. Don't take my life away, don't take my life away. I'm a victim, yeah. Don't take my life away, don't take my life away.
Kia ora and welcome back to the Raumere News Show here on Radio 1 Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. It is currently 11:30 and that was Tune Yards with Business. Before we had Business as Usual with economist Murat Ungur from the University of Otago to discuss the budget. And now we are joined by Associate Professor Joanna Williams from the University of Otago's Anatomy Department, who's helped uncover a new way of identifying Alzheimer's early by identifying certain blood particles. Now how are you doing on this fine otipoti morning, Joanna?
I'm excellent. Kia ora.
Sorry, there we go. Now, you've played a role in discovering these new blood molecules which can change as Alzheimer's disease kind of progresses. In layperson's terms, how do these particles change as Alzheimer's actually develops?
So we found these molecules in blood that change as the disease progresses. So some of them go up in blood, some of them come down. But as a pattern, they change as the disease progresses.
Right. So how long has this research that's just kind of come out, how long has that been going on for?
So that is a good 10 years of research.
10 years?
10 years, yep, of hard slog to try and get this to a point where it is informative across the disease process.
Mm-hmm.
We started with looking at blood samples denoted by people with Alzheimer's. And then, so that's all very well. We already know they've got Alzheimer's, so we can see a pattern that might match with them, but it's not all that useful for actually diagnosis of the disease. But so then we had to try and get samples from people who have perhaps earlier stages of the disease. And then what we really want are people who are at that really very early stage where they're not... they're not experiencing those characteristic symptoms of memory loss or that ability to not be able to function as normally as they would. And then that's where we can make a difference, because unfortunately by the time you start to lose even the first signs of memory loss, the brain's actually changed quite significantly and you've lost brain cells, and there's really no coming back from that. But if we can pick up people on that trajectory early, then we can dive in perhaps with drugs and therapies that can actually make a difference.
Right. Now you do make note that it is very difficult to detect people early on before the memory loss comes into it. How did you detect those people?
So we were really lucky to collaborate with a group in Australia, mm-hmm. and they have done some brain imaging studies. So they've actually looked at the levels of a molecule in the brain, which is called amyloid beta. And that's one of the diagnostic characteristics of Alzheimer's. You see that at post-mortem, but you can also detect that using PET scans when people are alive, but you have to use a PET scanner and actually a radioisotope, which is injected into the person, and that binds to the target protein, and you can see that build-up of the protein early on, before they've got any symptoms.
Right. Yeah. Now, this kind of new blood test that you've kind of in the very early stages of development of developing it. How early in the development of Alzheimer's can this test be used to identify the cognitive disease?
Well, we hope that it will be well before people actually show any signs of memory loss, because actually once you see that, that's really too late. People tend not even to come to a doctor to seek help at the very early stages when they're just starting to see signs of memory loss because, well, there's a lot of stigma associated with dementias, mm-hmm. and we've got no cure, none at all at the moment, and so what do you do? Mm. So people just perhaps don't want to know. But if we can detect people early, then we might actually be able to intervene early and come in with some of the therapies that have been developed but have failed in clinical trials. They might actually be really useful at that stage of the disease before you start losing brain cells.
Mm-hmm. Now, you did mention that there's no cure, but there is treatment for it. What kind of treatments are available for Alzheimer's at the moment, and are they very effective at combating the disease?
Unfortunately, they are not effective. There are no therapies that slow the trajectory of the disease. There are many, many that have been trialled, but, well, I actually think there's a lot of hope in Alzheimer's research at the moment because those therapies are based on like good science, and people have studied like the changes in the brain that occur, but the therapies are delivered to people who have already lost brain cells, and so you're not going to come back from that. But if you took those same therapies and gave them to people who were at that very early stage, then perhaps you could actually make a real difference in the disease.
And not only just personally, but also financially. I believe in the press release you noted that I think it would identifying the disease a year earlier and having therapy in that early stage would reduce Alzheimer's-related costs by $300 million?
Yeah. So there are worldwide about estimated to be 50 million people affected by dementias. Alzheimer's is the most common. Mm-hmm. And so you can just imagine the cost associated with that, not only the cost to the individual, but to the cost to the families that have to look after the affected individual, and then all of the health-related costs that come on top of that. So like, if you can make a little impact in this disease, then you can make a huge difference internationally.
For sure. Now, the press release for this paper also mentions that the only way to identify early Alzheimer's developments is through expensive and invasive procedures and very specialised facilities. Yeah. Do we have much of a Alzheimer's medical infrastructure here in Aotearoa to help with that?
Well, we do. So we can do those PET scans. We can look into people's brains using neuroimaging. We can look into blood fluids through the cerebral spinal fluid, so using lumbar punctures. Mm-hmm. But those aren't tools that you're going to use to screen people at an early stage that have got no reason to be feeling unwell, they've got no symptoms, they're not going to want to have a lumbar puncture, they're not going to want to go into a PET scanner for hours and have a radioisotope injected. So what we hope is that we can develop a quick screening tool, which is a blood test, that picks up people early so that we can then intervene early.
Mm-hmm. Now, going into the future, I guess, lead author of this paper, Diane Gouvermont, and yourself are undertaking further research to develop a biomarker of preclinical Alzheimer's. And this biomarker can be used to create an effective blood screening for diagnosing preclinical Alzheimer's. What kind of time frame do you think you'd give until there is such a blood screening available for the public?
Well, I think that's still a few years off for our work. Mm-hmm. There are screens available already which focus in on the amyloid protein. So that's the one that builds up in the brain that causes is thought to cause all the downstream effects.
Mm-hmm.
There's quite a bit of a debate about what is the cause of Alzheimer's, and so there's a risk of focusing in on that protein only. And what we hope is that our collection of markers in the blood will be a more realistic representation of the disease process.
Cool.
Yeah. So we're a wee ways off an actual test, but that's you've got to start somewhere.
Yeah. And it's in development at the very least.
It is, yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us here on the Ramere News Show.
Kia ora, thank you for your interview.
No worry. Kia ora. Up next, that was Associate Professor Joanna Williams speaking on some new Alzheimer's research, which could be developed into a blood test for actually screening preclinical Alzheimer's. It's pretty amazing stuff. It's currently 11:37 here on the Ramere News Show. Up next, we have a feature looking into ACT's alternate budget and the implications or the repercussions it has on Māori. But up first, we have Underworld with Born Slippy Nux.
world with Born Slippy, before which we were speaking with Professor Joanna Williams about some new research which shows blood tests could be used to detect Alzheimer's early. Coming up now, we have a feature from SAC investigating the repercussions of ACT's new alternative budget, which would abolish over 25 government entities, including Te Puni Kokiri, the Ministry of Māori Development, and the Ministry of Māori Development. SAC spoke with Māori politics expert and senior lecturer at Te Tumu Paereru Warbrick to find out what would happen if Te Puni Kokiri was abolished.
Nearly 2 weeks ago, the ACT Party unveiled a controversial alternate budget which would effectively gut the public sector. It's a budget that would have a significant detrimental effect for Māori in particular. ACT Party leader David Seymour announced the supposed real change budget in a parliamentary speech on Te Iwa o Haratua the 9th of May. The real changes that ACT wants to push through in this budget includes the large-scale privatising of state-owned enterprises, a gradual increase of the superannuation age to 67, and a major cut in public spending. This deep gash in public spending includes the termination of over 25 public offices, government-run programs, advisory groups, and ministries, with ACT hoping to remove the University Fees Free Scheme, the Human Rights Commission, the Climate Change Commission, as well as the Ministries for Women, Pacific Peoples, and Ethnic Communities, among other things. The ACT Party's new budget has drawn significant criticism from the Minister for Māori Development, Willie Jackson, and Te Pati Māori co-leader Rāwiri Waititi, who both condemned David Seymour for designing a budget which greatly harms Māori.
It's very sad watching Seymour, a man who claimed he was Māori. You just don't know where he's coming from now. Just a useless Māori, that's all.
David Seymour's a disgrace. He uses his Māori whakapapa to weaponise against his own people.
Jackson and Waititi's criticism of ACT's new budget bears significant weight, as ACT would abolish both the Office for Crown Māori Relations, which is the government arm responsible for negotiating Treaty of Waitangi claims, and the Ministry for Māori Development, Te Puni Kokiri. Te Puni Kokiri was established in 1991 after Parliament passed the Māori Development Act. The ministry serves to promote Māori development in areas such as education, employment and health through providing effective policy to the government. Te Puni Kokiri also provides a sort of surveillance role on Māori communities as the ministry consults with and monitors Māori communities to gather information which is then passed on to Cabinet. Senior lecturer at Te Tumu and Māori politics expert Pairo Warbrick says that if Te Puni Kokiri were abolished, the government would miss out on key information regarding Māori communities across Aotearoa, which could have undesirable consequences such as mass protests and untreated disease outbreaks in Māori communities.
If you remove that surveillance of Māori communities by abolishing Te Puni Kokiri, the government is going blind into Māori policies. This will be a disaster. All of a sudden, you can have things like Ihu Mātou happen in all sorts of places. Like all of a sudden, there's a group of Māori that are occupying the Timaru Airport, causing all sorts of trouble. You know, the planes can't come in, or hell breaks loose. What does the government do? Who are they going to dispatch to go and find out what's happening there? They've just abolished their arm Te Puni Kokiri that was able to inform them about what's happening on the ground. So they've got a massive problem.
Although Te Puni Kokiri's advice can be ignored by Cabinet or the ministries it's appealing to, it has seen massive success in the past, with Warbrick citing the Whānau Ora program and Te Puni Kokiri's efforts to support Māori at the very beginning of the pandemic as effective tools for improving Māori well-being.
A number of Māori weren't in permanent jobs. They were on casual contracts, so they haven't got access to the government wage scheme. So what are we going to do in regard to that? The advice that they're giving is we've got to actually identify who these Māori whānau are, and we've got to start delivering food packages. So these are on-the-ground stuff that they're doing. Or alternatively, it's if we go back to old initiatives, which are still in place today as Whānau Ora, those are programs that turn around and go meet with whānau and go meet with other organisations to turn around and say, what can we, the government, what can we do to actually help your stakeholders or your Māori people out there?
Under ACT's budget, key elements of Te Puni Kokiri, like the Whānau Ora program, would come under the Ministry of Health's purview. But Warbrick believes that this assimilation will lead to the Ministry of Health suffering greatly, as ACT aren't prepared to give the ministry any additional funding to cope with its additional responsibilities.
their budgets are already severely strained. So you're wanting to take the things that Te Puni Kōkiri are doing and saying, oh, there's all this mahi, there's all this work you got to do, but you got to turn around and do it within your budget. And those areas are going to go, but we're struggling now.
National Party leader Christopher Luxon says he won't rule out any of ACT's policies at this stage. Despite this, Warbrick says it's highly unlikely that Te Puni Kōkiri will be abolished, even if National and ACT were to go into government, simply due to the political fallout of following through on such a risky decision.
Who is going to be the Minister of Māori Affairs? That minister is going to get hounded. And let's say they pass it, then of course the government is going to be under severe attack within the debating chamber and called to account when all these issues start going on in regard to Māori communities.
ACT's alternate budget should be seen as a warning for any Māori voters concerned with Māori issues. But as Warbrick noted, ACT's Māori support is supremely low, so they really don't have to worry about those voters at all.
You can actually say that David Seymour is following a kaupapa Māori approach. David Seymour is the MP for Epsom, and those are his people. It's a very affluent, very much a white electorate. If he was standing for one of the Māori electorates, he's not going to get into power, is he? He'll come last. He's not targeting Māori. Yeah, he has his own whānau and his own hapū. Those are the people of Epsom.
That feature was looking into the alternate budget, which would have great drastic impacts for Māori. And that feature only really looked at one thing that ACT was going to remove from the from the public sector. I'm sure there'll be a range of other consequences for removing other things. Up next, we have Off to Market with Market Manager Michelle Driscoll. It is currently 11:50 here on the Uramere News. And up next, we have Te Kahu with Ehine E. Stay tuned. That was Te Kahu with Ehine E. We are currently joined here by Michelle Driscoll from the Otago Farmers Market in our weekly off-to-market segment where we find out what's good in the hood at the market.
Kia ora, Michelle. How are you going?
Morena, good, thank you.
So tell us, what is happening at the market this week?
Well, there's lots of winter vegetables are all around. You know, there's the big collies. They're about $4 each at the moment, which is a great price.
Fantastic.
And they will make a good meal and a good soup. We've got Bright Lights Silver Beet, which Ettrick's have got. Ettrick Gardens for $2.50 a bunch. So that was a good thing. Celery and spring onions, and there's lots of, if you want to go the salad thing, there's lots of great salad greens and lettuces and you know, all of that, microgreens. And yeah, all the usual goodies and coffee and lots of deliciousness.
Sounds grand. Now, I remember when we talked on the phone a little bit earlier, you mentioned that you had a pumpkin soup recipe for us, which I'm very excited to hear because I think it's soup season just about.
Well, it suddenly does feel like soup season, doesn't it? My easy kind of go-to with a good pumpkin, because, I mean, pumpkins are such a good price, and they, even if you don't get to it now, you can always, it will sit for a while. You know, it doesn't go off, or it does last. But I would recommend making soup this weekend, and I mean, I just whack a whole pumpkin in the microwave and just cook it until it goes soft. Mm-hmm. And then just scoop out the seeds and the fibrous bits and pieces, and then just scoop out all the goodness. And then add some coconut cream and some powdered ginger and fresh chilies and a bit of nutmeg and salt and pepper, and put vegetable or chicken stock, or, you know, any fresh herbs, fresh thyme. It's always really good in it. Or even like some of the tartan sari, they've got carrot pickle, which is I'm addicted to, but that would be a really good thing to throw tablespoon of that in, just to kind of give it a bit of heat, and then blitz it all up, and it's pretty easy. But yeah, just doing it in the microwave, cooking the pumpkin is a good way to kind of throw it in and forget it. Oh, and throw some garlic in as well. Obviously, with all the winter ills and chills at the moment, a good lot of garlic is the way to go. But and that can feed a whole family or a whole flat, something like that. But it's pretty much kind of in a one pot wonder. It's good.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, that's such a nice, easy way to make soup. I love putting a little bit of Thai curry paste as well in with pumpkin soup.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Anything with a little bit of heat and a little bit of spice is always really good, I think, in a soup. It just cuts through that richness.
Some breads and stuff we can get from the market to go with soup?
Oh, yeah, like those ciabatta or
something. Definitely, yeah. Well, I mean, Bread and More, they've got a real crispy sourdough baguette. And Gilbert's have got good otaki sourdough, or even just like focaccia or something like that. It just mops up soup really nicely. Or, you know, just the rye breads if you want it, or, yeah, they've got such a good selection and everything. All their breads are made from scratch. It's a perfect combination with soup, really, isn't it?
That's fantastic. Now, I think last week you mentioned that you guys had some nuts at the farmer's market. Do you guys still have these nuts?
Yes, yep, they're there. They'll be there for a few more weeks, and then they go away for the winter. But those nuts, I remember where they were. They're near Cromwell, so they come over from Cromwell. So they'll be there this weekend, and they're just near, beside, as you come in the main gate, to the right, beside Ettrick's. And they've got fresh almonds there too, which I think would be quite cool if someone wants to, you know, make their own almond milk. But they're actually in the shell, so you have to have a good nutcracker to get into them. But I just think that's, you know, fresh walnuts. Walnuts actually will be great crumbled up in a bit of soup as well on top.
That also good.
With a bit of sour cream on, that'd be delicious. Perfect combination.
Grated almonds also serve as a good kind of porridge topping as well.
Oh, yeah, it's a good idea.
I used to do it's that.
Porridge weather, isn't it? And there's also, like, you know, like for it's still graduation, another graduation weekend, isn't it, I think?
Yeah, I think so, probably. Yeah.
You know, like there's little snacks, like the veggie chips up at Catelyn's Kitchen are so delicious. She does, like, crisped up parsnips, beetroot and carrots. And they're lightly salted, and yeah, they're really delicious. And take your own jar or click clack container, and she'll fill it. And for like $3, you get a good little amount, you know, actually quite a good big amount to snack on, which is really yummy. That's nice thing for a Saturday night with a glass of wine or beer or whatever. Mm. And what else? And fresh herbs. I mean, there's a few of the vendors still got fresh herbs this week, probably one of the last weeks to get fresh herbs. And that's quite a good thing, just to grab a pot, and that will last you through winter, you know, on the windowsill. That's always a good idea to juju up any kind of dish that you've got.
Mm. Add a bit of flavour.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us here today on
You're
the Radio
welcome.
One News Show. I'm sure we'll be catching up with you next week to see what else is going on.
Thank you very much. Keep warm out there.
Yeah.
All right. See you later. Have a good weekend.
Have a great weekend. Take care.
That was Michelle Driscoll, our manager of the Otago Farmers Market, telling us about what's happening at the market. And now it's time for us to wrap up our show. It's 11:58 here on R1 News.
Mm.
We've had a busy show today.
We sure have. We've had Business as Usual with Murat Ungur from the University of Otago Economics Department to talk about the government budget and what it means and how it can impact students.
We also talked with Professor Joanna Williams about some new research that shows blood tests could help detect early Alzheimer's.
We featured a feature looking into ACT's alternate budget and its implications for Māori, given that they want to remove the Ministry of Māori Development.
Yeah, and now it's time for us to pass on. Coming up next on the program is the Friday Nooner.
With Commander Newton,
yes,
a.k.a.
Yeah.
Jack Gilmore. Yeah, yeah.
Remember to stay tuned on weekdays from 11 to 12 a.m. for your dose of current events on Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi.
That's right. That's so true. We have Tino Saw with Pumpkin Belly up now. Keep listening.
This is a song of the old time proverbs. This is a song. Sugar belly became the king on the saxophone. Whatsoever you want, got to work very hard to gain. Yeah. Whatsoever you want, she said, I've got to work hard, hard to gain. To gain, yeah. To gain, yeah. I really got to work very hard to gain. So, oh, what a walk.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
but find more at r1.co.nz.